Williams hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Matteau swoops in to intercept. Matteau behind the net. Swings it in front. He's down! Matteau! Defend Matteau! And the Rangers have one more hell to climb, baby!
Curry, way downtown.
I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody.
You believe in miracles? Yes!
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode number 51 of the Agents of Field podcast. I am your host, Ryan Lessman, and joining me today, I have a very special guest. Joining us from the Liberty Blue podcast and the Upper Bowl GM podcast, Mr. Nick Zeraris. Nick, how are we doing?
I'm great. I've been watching baseball all day. I've gotten like no work done. This is the ideal outcome for a weekday.
Exactly. You got baseball, playoffs going on, hockey preseason, basketball preseason, Sunday football, college football. It's the greatest time of the year.
And we had the Ryder Cup over the weekend. I went to Talladega over the weekend. There is as much sports content as you can possibly need. There are no thoughts being formed between my ears. It is delightful.
It's the greatest time of the year. We are excited to have you as a first-time guest. We want you to introduce yourself to the listeners. So tell us some of your sports fandoms, maybe some other things you're a fan of, and maybe your favorite players of all time or moments of all time.
Okay, I'm an unfortunately New York sports fan, like most of us. Rangers, Knicks, Yankees, Mets, soccer, Liverpool. I am one of the rare people who likes AEW and WWE.
Hell yeah.
One of the few. What else? I'm a NASCAR guy. I'm a Formula One guy. I'm a golf guy. If it's competitive, I'll watch it, pretty much is how I'm at. I'll watch tennis when there's a major on. Sports are the best. They are the best we do. I am a movie head. What do I have? I have like four, I want to say like 500 something movies total logged on my letterbox. I think I'm at like 180 for the year this year. So I consume a lot of stuff.
A jack of all trades, so to speak. So we are excited to have you on a day where one of what I'm assuming is both of our favorite athletes has retired from the game of hockey, Mr. Derek Stepan. What a just a class act wherever he's been. I mean, he was an unfortunate cut for the Rangers rebuild, but he hung him up today. That game 7 OT goal will live in infamy and got us nowhere after that, but thoughts on Derek Stepan, as you said, a cursed New York fan.
One of the guys you felt that coming into last decade was going to be one of the focal points of an eventual championship team. On a Stanley Cup winning team, he's probably a second or third line center. The Rangers never really had the center depth around him to put him in a role to maximize for what he was. But he was a really solid hockey player for a long time. They opted to shed salary, try and get a little bit younger. And that was really the first trade that precipitated the eventual rebuild that happened when they swapped him for D'Angelo in a first round pick, which ended up not really turning into anything because it was Elias Anderson and D'Angelo who they bought out. So all things considered, you'll always have the goal against Washington, the professional debut where he scored a hat trick against Buffalo, scoring the goal with the broken jaw against Montreal in 2014 after Brandon Prust broke his face when he wasn't paying attention. Just one of the really good guys. It's funny. One of my friends who lives in Minnesota texted me, "I think Derek Stepan's at the rink. I'm going to go ask him if he's Derek Stepan." And she texted me back, "It's Derek Stepan. He's talking to somebody from the Wild right now." So I finding out that he was joining the Wild organization accidentally, very funny. And I don't know if you saw or not, but Haglund's joining the Wild organization as well.
That's two guys that played together. I mean, it does make sense in a way. Stepan has the Minnesota connections, but Haglund going there is a little bit, I guess it may be a package deal with Stepan, the Billy Guerin connection maybe. But yeah, it's I fully expect Derek Brassard to be the next one to retire just to start dwindling down all these guys from those Rangers teams. But you mentioned the Minnesota Wild. Let's get into it. So we are going to be talking, well, pause on the Minnesota Wild, continue on the Minnesota part. We're going to be talking about our MLB playoff predictions to start, and then we're going to go into our NHL season preview. Nick, the Minnesota Twins have won a playoff baseball game for the first time in 19 years. what is going on in that city?
Kevin Gausman didn't have it. You see it all the time in these playoff games where one side usually blows up early. And granted, they only gave up a handful of runs. But when your starter doesn't have their best stuff, you're walking guys, you're lingering. Managers have quick hooks in these games. In theory, that was the best matchup of all of these wild card series in terms of pitching, Minnesota and Toronto. You're talking about teams with Kevin Gausman and Jose Berrios, and then the Twins with Joe Ryan and Pablo Lopez. Like, there's legitimately high-end talent on both those staffs, and it really came down to hitting today, timely hitting, situational hitting. And for once, the Twins aren't playing the Yankees or the Red Sox in the first round. That's the other point why they finally won a game.
Yes, absolutely. It's definitely... I mean, the Blue Jays are not what everyone thought they were going to be when they went on this tear of developing prospects. I mean, they just snuck into the playoffs as the sixth seed. And I think that, you know, Minnesota is a three seed. Again, they have the curse that's going on there. But to be playing a sixth seed, to be starting at home, I think is, you know, it helps them. Do you think they make it out of this series, or they will, you know, end up repeating their misfortunes?
So I spent a lot of time today thinking about all of these series because I feel like all of them, other than Miami, Philadelphia, are pretty close to coin flips. You could see them going either way. If Miami beats Philly without their two best pitchers, I would genuinely be surprised if that happened. All the rest of these, I could see going either way. And that series in particular, Toronto underperformed all year. I was reading a bunch of different things. I listened to a few things today while I was getting ready to do this. And the consensus amongst baseball people was you just kept waiting for the Blue Jays to kind of get going, click on all cylinders. And aside from a couple of their starting pitchers, it never really happened for their lineup. Like, you would expect pretty much every single guy in their lineup other than Kevin Kiermaier to have an OPS like 30 to 40 points higher. You would expect a little bit more, especially in terms of power from some of those guys. But I think realistically, Minnesota's pitching advantage helps them a lot. Even though they're dinged up, getting Correa and Julian back helps them. I think Minnesota does pull that series out.
Yeah, I think, you know, whoever gets the first game in a three-game series generally, has the advantage. So now that we know that they have the first game under their belt, and, you know, they only got to win one more, but the next round wouldn't be easy whether they're playing well, I guess they would only be able to play the Astros, right? Because it reseeds in baseball. Yeah. So if they play, that's not going to be easy. That's a team that's had their number for a long time. It would have almost been better if they were in that other matchup so that they could have gotten the number one seed Orioles. But the other matchup that we know the result for in the AL was the Rangers and the Rays. The Rangers shut out the Rays 4-0 today. What are your thoughts on that series?
I watched every single pitch of that game. They left Glasnow in a little too long. They had the bases loaded in a 2-0 game in the top of the fifth. And at that point, and we know Tampa Bay historically is pretty quick with the hook with their guys to get them out of there to avoid that second, third time through the matchup. Texas barely got into the playoffs too. They limped in. I mean, they're down three starting pitchers. Their ace right now, and I'm using ace very loosely, is Nathan Eovaldi, who's 107 years old and has 20,000 career innings and is barely holding it together. Any team, the thing that's confusing about the Rangers is they've had a really good lineup all year. Then they entirely wilted. The month of September, they hit something like 190 as a team. Their bullpen is atrocious. But the Rays today just couldn't put anything together offensively. And you would think that would be the real advantage Tampa Bay would have, is the fact that they actually have quality pitching and the Rangers don't. But the Rangers pitching held out today. And in these short series, you don't need to be that good. You just need to last a little bit longer than the other guy.
Exactly. And that's where I think, you know, Tampa, if they do end up falling in this, will really miss their guys that have gotten hurt early in the season, because, you know, in a series like this, you need your best three pitchers. And if, you know, even one of them's out of the lineup and you're relying on your fourth guy. And I know against Texas, where they are already injured and they already don't have the best pitching staff, you know, it may not matter as much, but you still want your best guys in a three game series to try to get you into the real deal. Like, so I ultimately think that the Rangers are going to end up blowing this. I think, you know, like you said, they limped in. I think the Rays will be able to figure it out, hopefully, but I don't see them going much further than the next round.
That's the thing. Tampa Bay is set up in a way that they're supposed to kind of be interchangeable parts where you can use any of their guys in basically any situation and more or less hold it together. Jordan Montgomery pitched really well today. Like, I didn't know Jordan Montgomery was capable of pitching that well to go 8 innings. He kind of looked like vintage Andy Pettit pounding guys up and in with that sinker cutter combination. He was really good today, and I didn't know Jordan Montgomery was built like that, in all honesty. I got to hit him with the Shaquille O'Neal, I apologize, I was unfamiliar with your game. He made the Rays look awful today, and the Rays have a good lineup. The Rays were second in the American League in runs. That's not a bad lineup, so to do what he did today, that's really a lot. But for Tampa, I think Tampa Bay pulls this out mostly because the Texas bullpen is just horrendous, frankly. In the playoffs, you need one guy that's dependable, and Chapman was fine today, but every single person who's watched the Yankees over the last 5 or 6 years knows that Chapman is wholly undependable in these situations. And if they manage to hold it together even one more round, I don't see them getting past the next round, Texas.
Yeah, I would highly doubt that as well. I mean, it's just crazy that they went out and acquired a lot of pitchers. I mean, what did they? They grabbed three pitchers. They grabbed Montgomery, Chapman, and Scherzer. And yeah, they still are like barely being able to put together a staff. Like, it's just insane. I got Rays in this one, and it, you know, I know you agree, but you never know. Game that is currently, well, both those games are actually ongoing now, but for the NL, we've got the 6-seed Diamondbacks versus the 3-seed Brewers and the 5-seed Marlins versus the 4-seed Phillies. Take your pick, which one of those you want to start with.
Let's do Phillies Marlins, because we can get that over with pretty quickly. The Phillies are set up to be good in the postseason. The Marlins are missing their two best pitchers. The Marlins are kind of just happy to be here, and the Phillies really feel like they can win the World Series. One of the recurring themes in a lot of the previews I read and listened to throughout the last week was the Phillies kind of internally feel like they're in a situation like the Royals were, where they went to the World Series and lost and then got back the following year and won. A lot of people in that organization feel like that's kind of the trajectory they're on. They've got pretty much the classic playoff setup for what we've seen that works in the last couple of years. A ton of power hitters, two great starters, and then a couple power pitchers out of the bullpen. You don't need more than that the way the playoffs are set up now, where if you have two starting pitchers and you have a competent number three, you have two good relievers, and you can hit some home runs, that's all it takes. I mean, that Phillies team last year wasn't that talented, but they got hot at the right time, and they held it together just enough with their pitching. They were kind of out of their depth against Houston because Houston's lineup last year was just ridiculous. But the Phillies, I think, are probably the most likely team out of everybody that's not the Braves or the Dodgers to win the World Series, just because of how good they were last year, how that group has kind of played this year. I mean, from June on, they played at 100-win pace. They came out of the gate really slow. Like, Schwarber hit like 150 through July, and he slowly got that to 200. Trey Turner looked like the worst player in baseball for the first 3 months of the season, and he ended up putting together a really solid season. The Marlins, they're a nice story, but they're still on the upward trajectory. If they lose to the next two, if they lose today and tomorrow, they're not going to feel particularly bad about it. They're just happy to be here.
Yeah, I think it's pretty, and this really hurts me because I hate the city of Philadelphia with a passion. I hate their sports teams. I hate their sports fans. But I think that the Phillies experience they got last year, and just the, like, all the things you laid out, the two great starting pitchers, the power hitters, it should be a Philly win. Whether it's a sweep or not, I don't know, but I am agreeing with you. Phillies move on. And the Brewers and the Diamondbacks, what do you have on this? The Josh Donaldson Brewers.
Hey, Josh, I was talking about this the other day with one of my Yankee fan friends, because I'm a sicko, and I went to a lot of Yankee and Met games this year, even though both teams were terrible. And we went to a Yankee game the first week of August, and Donaldson, I want to say, had like 14 hits on the entire season in the beginning of August, and 5 of the 14 were home runs. And that's just, I cannot fathom that level of inconsistency at the plate. The Brewers are going to get undone by what they always get undone by in the postseason. They have great pitching, but they don't hit enough. They have two hitters in their lineup that are above average in the catcher Contreras and Christian Yelich, who had a nice bounce back season. But other than that, Willy Adames hasn't been nearly as good as he was 2 years ago, where he got down ballot MVP votes. The Brewers will go as far as Burns and Peralta can carry them, and we've seen the limitations of that. I wrote this down because I remember this and I wanted to think about it. So the last couple of years, two years ago, the last time the Brewers made the playoffs, they lost to the Braves in four games. They scored 6 runs in 4 games. The year before that, in a best of 3, they scored 2 runs in 2 games. The year before that, they scored 3 runs in the 1-game elimination game. And then in 2018, 10 runs in 3 games in 2018 before getting eliminated. They just haven't scored enough. And generally speaking, we have seen in baseball that great offenses beat great pitching staffs in the postseason just because of the way variance works, that all you need is one pitch to hit. And you saw it last year that the Astros mashed their way to a World Series. Yeah, they had good pitching, but that lineup, they had 7 guys with over an 800 OPS. And the two best teams in baseball this year, the Braves and the Orioles, are in that same category of teams that have 800, 900 OPS guys throughout the lineup, 30 home runs, 100 home RBIs. The Brewers don't really have anybody like that. I think there's a good chance. I was texting with one of my friends as that game started and said, I think there's a good chance the Diamondbacks could win that series. And I think the Diamondbacks could give the Dodgers or the Braves a decent series because they have Merrill Kelly and they have Zach Gallen, who are, you know, that's what you need. You need the two pitchers. The Arizona bullpen is horrendous, but they've got enough guys. When you talk about Carroll, who's going to win Rookie of the Year, Christian Walker, who's a really solid home run hitter, who just had a home run as I was looking over to the right. Ketel Marte has been an all-star a couple times. And they have the other Gurriel brother, who's pretty good. They have a significantly better lineup than Milwaukee, and they have a comparable pitching staff. They just don't have the bullpen that Milwaukee does.
That's fair. And I could be completely wrong here, but Milwaukee didn't do much at the deadline other than really adding Donaldson, whereas Arizona went out, they got Paul Sewald to clean up the bullpen, and they added Tommy Pham to add a little bit of depth to the lineup. I know it's not major moves, but they're moves that, you know, show that they're trying to be competitive and actually have a shot at this. And I think that this was probably the most favorable matchup for them was against Milwaukee, even though they're the 6th seed.
Oh, 100%. Oh, and Milwaukee added Canna. That was the other one.
Oh, yeah.
Donaldson, Canna. They didn't do a whole lot. Milwaukee never spends on anything. This has always been their MO. They missed their window. The team 2 years ago that lost to the Brewers in the first round, the Braves in the first round, that was the best iteration of Milwaukee we've seen, where Burns was a Cy Young guy. Brandon Woodruff, who is injured and won't be in the wild card series, he got down ballot Cy Young votes. Freddie Peralta got down ballot Cy Young votes. And they had Hader and Devin Williams in the bullpen. That was the best iteration of the Brewers we've seen. And that team lasted 4 games against the Braves.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm leaning towards being in agreement with you that I think that the Diamondbacks have a really good shot at winning this. Are you comfortable saying that you think they could win this series?
Oh, definitely. They have enough offense to outscore Milwaukee, and they have enough pitching where if their starters are able to keep them in the game where they don't have to go to the bullpen too early, I feel reasonably fine about it. It's 4-3 right now in the 4th inning. And if you can ding Corbin Burns for 4 runs, I feel pretty good about your lineup. I mean, even down the lineup, you're talking about guys like Evan Longoria, who's been around forever and is still a reasonably talented player. Mm-hmm. Arizona should win this series, frankly. Milwaukee's offense is not enough for these types of games, and they don't have for power. That's the other thing that we can talk about in regards to the bigger picture of the MLB playoffs. If you don't hit for home runs, you're not going to do anything in the postseason, because that's the bread and butter for winning this time of year. It is really hard to string together rallies against the good teams in baseball because they have the better pitchers and the better bullpens. It was the Mets undoing against the Padres last year. It was the Yankees undoing at certain points over the last couple postseason runs. I think Arizona is better equipped for the postseason than Milwaukee is. And Milwaukee only made the playoffs because the Central was so bad, frankly.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair. So let's move on to the divisional series. So based on our predictions, we would have Rays at the Orioles to start, the Twins at the Astros, the Phillies at the Braves, and the Diamondbacks at the Dodgers. who do you think is coming out of these series to go into the respective championship series?
I would like to say it'll be Houston, Baltimore, and then it will be, I really want to pick the Diamondbacks to play the Braves in the NLCS, because I can see a world where they beat the Dodgers, because the Dodgers pitching is holding on by a thread. This is a staff that's down six starting pitchers that has played Mookie Betts at second base and shortstop because they don't have bodies to play the middle infield, especially since Gavin Lux got hurt. Bobby Miller was decent for them this year. He was a decent prospect call up, but the Dodgers pitching is not what it's been the last couple of years. And they kind of did that on purpose. Everybody operated under the assumption this year, the Dodgers were pretty content to play out whatever happened this year because they were going to reset their luxury tax and then go really crazy in the offseason this year, whether it be Ohtani, Yamamoto, Juan Soto, what have you. I really want to pick Arizona. I don't think I can. Dodgers, Braves, and then Astros, Orioles.
Dodgers, Braves, Astros, Orioles. Okay. I definitely agree on the Astros, Orioles, and I think the Braves are going to, I mean, the Braves are ridiculous. How many individual records have they set and what team records and just nuts. And I want to pick the Diamondbacks. I just, like you said, every year before this year, all you heard was Dodgers, Dodgers, Dodgers. They're so good. Nobody's going to beat them. I feel like I haven't heard that this much this year. And yeah, it's exactly contributed to what you said, that they downed six starting pitchers at points. You know, I think the Diamondbacks could be this year's Mariners and actually go on a little bit of a Cinderella run. So I'm going to go Diamondbacks, Braves, and then Orioles, Astros. World Series predictions. What do you got here? Do you think that the young up-and-coming Orioles have what it takes to beat the Astros?
I would like to say yes, especially because that Houston rotation just hasn't been good, especially as of late. Verlander looks pretty cooked. Framber Valdez has not been as good as he was last year. But Houston's lineup is just a little bit better than Baltimore's. Baltimore's rotation is not great. They don't have Bautista in the bullpen, who had to get shoulder surgery, who's been the best closer in baseball over the last 3 years. I think the Astros are just a little bit better. And then I think the Braves are the best team in baseball. If they don't beat the Diamondbacks, if they don't make the World Series, it's a disappointment for them, because they're better than everybody else, frankly. They looked like it coming into the season before the season started. They'd be the best team in baseball on paper, and they were. And now we sit here wondering if the high variance-ness of baseball playoffs will be their undoing, but I don't see a world in which they don't beat the Diamondbacks or the Dodgers, frankly. The Braves are just significantly better. The only real qualm is if Max Fried is healthy. And even if he's not, they've still got Strider, they've still got Morton, and their bullpen is good enough.
Oh, you saying Max Fried just made my day. You just said they're better than everyone else. Better than you, baby. Max Jacob Friedman. That would be an incredible collab. Let's get it done, AEW. Tony Khan, I know you're listening.
Hey, there's an opportunity for something very funny there, but MJF is salt of the earth. He's a Met fan. He would never collaborate with those.
Oh, of course not. Absolutely not. I mean, the merch they were selling at Grand Slam tells you exactly what you need to know. All right, so Braves, Astros. It's the Braves. We've said it three, four times already. I mean, they're the best team in baseball. They might be one of the best teams ever in baseball.
Like, oh, they've had one of the best regular seasons of the last 20 years. There's not even a doubt. And they did it with Fried making like 15 starts. If Fried is healthy and pitches the entire season, they probably won another 5 to 10 games just based on him versus the replacements they had. I think the Braves are clearly the best team. If they don't win, I think it's more of a case of variance than them not being good enough.
No, that's fair. I mean, again, you know me, hockey's always on the brain, as I know it is with you as well. But, you know, the historically good Boston Bruins, they lost in the first round. So you literally never know. I mean, an 8-seed Los Angeles Kings won the Stanley Cup. So I based on what we've seen on paper and the actual results that we've seen in the regular season, there should be nobody standing in the way of the Braves. However,
no,
we know things don't go like that in the playoffs.
No, that's what makes the baseball playoffs similar to the hockey playoffs, in that it is easier for variance to happen in baseball because of the way the game is structured. And similar to hockey, where the two highest variants are hockey and baseball. And you would think it would be football because football is a single elimination playoff format. But generally speaking, the best team wins in football. Hockey and baseball are a little more variance influenced, I should say, because of just the nature of the sport. How many different variables happen in every single sequence of a game, where it only takes one home run. It only takes one good inning out of a reliever, and you can swing a series. Oh, my God. Is that Miguel Castro? The Diamondbacks have Miguel Castro in the game in the fourth inning. That's right. They were doing an opener. That's right. The Diamondbacks did an opener. Okay. That took me a minute. Why? I was like, their pitcher wasn't doing atrocious, but that Miguel, speaking of Miguel Castro, real quick, I don't know if you're an Immaculate Grid guy or not, but Miguel Castro is one of the really good ones because he's been on 8 or 9 teams.
Yeah, I've been doing more of the hockey, the puck duku, yeah. But when I do jump onto the Immaculate Grid, Edwin Jackson is my guy because he's pretty much
12 of the 30 teams.
Yeah, so that's a fairly safe one to go with. But I think it's going to be the Braves. I want to go back to something you said earlier because I forgot about it and then I remembered it. But you had said that Josh Donaldson, you had never seen someone so inconsistent at the plate. And I raise you one Joey Gallo for the Yankees.
It's a different kind of thing, though, because I'd seen Joey Gallo do that in slightly smaller spurts. That was really the only difference between his production in New York and Texas, is he just went into a longer slump in New York than in Texas. Like, I'd seen him go on that kind of cold streak, but usually it was a little bit shorter. Donaldson is just, I think Donaldson is genuinely done as a professional baseball player, but the Yankees didn't want to give up on him for whatever reason, and they kept trotting him out there in spite of all the injuries, in spite of the fact he couldn't hit a fastball, in spite of the fact he couldn't catch up to like 90 down the middle, which Donaldson looks done. The fact he's starting in a playoff game for the Brewers is kind of a testament to how weak that Brewers lineup is, frankly.
Yep. No, that's fair. I just, you know, there's a few players on this podcast and teams for that matter that we always have to roast on. Every episode, there's a Ryan Tannehill slander hour. There's usually a Joey Gallo message. The Minnesota curse and the Vegas Golden Knights are douchebags. That is the four that we consistently go after. So I just wanted to raise that. So Braves, in theory, winning the World Series. If they get there, who is your World Series MVP?
I mean, Acuna's been the best player in baseball. That's not Otani. I mean, he went 40-70, which nobody'd ever done before. If it's not Acuna, I don't see it being any of their pitchers. Maybe Matt Olson. Matt Olson, who had like 140 RBIs and like 50-something home runs. Those would be my two guesses. Like right now, if you could find it, you probably get better value betting on one of them to win World Series MVP than the Braves to win the World Series. So if you think the Braves are that good, that's your bet, is you bet Matt Olson or Acuna to win World Series MVP in like the NLCS. And that should cover you for the rest of football season, because the Braves are the best team. It's just a matter of if they can get there or not.
Absolutely fair. Yeah. I mean, what was it? 40-70 for Acuña this year.
Never been done before.
Yeah. I was listening to, and my other co-host Brian is going to kill me for saying this. I think it was Michael Kay. No, it was DiPietro and Rothenberg. And they were talking about it. And he's like, yeah, 40-60 has never been done before. Neither was 40-50 or whatever. And they were like, yeah, no shit. If 40-70 has never been done or whatever they said. And it was just, I'm going to shut up because I just mumbled about nothing. So let's move on to our Infinity Gauntlet trivia question. Sorry, we do not have the music today. Brian has the soundboard. Wah, wah, wah. I'm not going to do my Thanos impression. So Nick, your question for today is, there are 6 very famous NFL quarterbacks who have been who have played at least one game in the NFL and have also been drafted by MLB teams. Can you name them? And then for the bonus, who drafted them?
Russell Wilson was, I want to say, a Rangers draft pick. I'm not positive on that. Tom Brady was an Expos draft pick.
So yes on Brady. Wilson was one of them, but he was Baltimore.
Gotcha, gotcha.
That was the first one at least.
Gotcha.
I think he ended up going to Rangers training camp, but he was drafted by Baltimore.
Yeah, and he went to Yankees training camp 1 year too, which was weird. Baseball. I'm trying to think of who were good athletes that played other positions.
I'll give you a hint. Two of them are active, two of them left are not.
Oh, Kyler Murray, duh.
Yes.
Kyler Murray was an A's draft pick. Yep. Not Lamar, not Josh Allen, not Mac Jones, not Zach Wilson. I want to say, for some reason, I feel like I was going to say Derek Carr for some reason, and that's definitely not it because he was barely good enough at football to get drafted.
Good instincts. I'll give you a hint on this one. Taylor Swift.
Mahomes was drafted?
Yes, he was a Tigers draft pick in 2014.
Okay. I didn't know Mahomes got drafted. That one I didn't know. And then the retired guys, you could say literally anyone, and I'd believe you.
John Elway drafted by
the Yankees.
The Yankees and the Royals.
Yeah.
And then Michael Vick drafted by the Rockies in 2000.
That's interesting. That's a very interesting timeline. I might write that down and steal that and do it that as a content series on YouTube. Throw Michael Vick and MLB The Show as a Road to the Show player.
That'd be a pretty sick. I found this all out from a Sporkle quiz, and then I verified everything. But some other fun facts. Bo Jackson's the only multi-sport athlete to be drafted five times to five different teams. Dave Winfield was the only player to be drafted to three different sports, basketball, baseball, and football. Tom Glavine was the only player to be drafted to an NHL team as well as baseball. And Tony Gwynn was the only player to be drafted to two different teams in the same city, the Padres and the Clippers, when the Clippers were in San Diego.
That I knew. What was I going to say? I'm trying to think. There was what? There was Dion. There was Brian Jordan. There were a couple guys there in the late 90s and early 2000s who were doing both, which is just ridiculous, frankly, because baseball is the hardest sport. And like to do football instead of baseball training, ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that was just a fun question, and I figured you would have a little bit of fun with that one.
Definitely.
So I did realize that I have seen a new movie this week. It was not anything. Well, maybe it was. It was something that was definitely talked about in the media, and I enjoyed it very much. So I saw the live action Little Mermaid now that it went to Disney Plus. And I thought I had never seen the original animated one. And then I think I watched that one on the same day first to see how I liked it. And I liked it. I enjoyed it. I thought that a lot of the stuff they did with underwater, quote, unquote, was very impressive. I thought that, you know, the music was just as good. The one issue I had, it was Awkwafina as Scuttle. I just, the voice goes right through me. I think she's very, very funny, but the voice kills me. Have you seen the new Little Mermaid?
I haven't. Now that it's on Disney Plus, I probably will take care of that. All of the live action Disney movies are wholly unnecessary, but the music is so good, I don't care, frankly. That was the justification to go see The Lion King. That'll be the justification to watch The Little Mermaid. When the live action Hercules comes out, that will be the justification for that. I'm sure there will be a live action Tarzan at some point in the next few years too, just to get the soundtracks back out there, because the music is genuinely good.
Yes, absolutely. And that was the critique. And then again, it came out right around COVID. It went straight to Disney Plus for premium with Mulan, where the music wasn't in there. But they did something different with that one, where they actually told the story. And there was people were like, there's no Mushu, there's no music. What's the point? And it was really good. I think it was one of my favorite, if not my favorite live action that they've done, despite having no music. I mean, anytime you get Ming-Na Wen in anything, it's awesome. But yeah, that's just my personal preference.
I'm trying to think. Did I see any movies this week? I've been on a real slump like the last 3 weeks since football came back, because football consumes all of my content habits during football season. I'm not going to watch a movie. I'm going to watch tape. I'm not going to watch a movie. I'm going to watch football. That's really all it is. It's kind of rough because I consume a ridiculous amount of movies, but we've got good stuff coming. Killers of Flower Moon in a few weeks. That'll be very good. Very excited. Looking forward to that.
Don't forget about the Aerostar movie. I'm very excited.
I'll
for
be
that.
There.
So I'll will be I. there. Yep. All right. So let's move on to the main reason for getting together today, our NHL season preview for the 2023-2024 season. Nick, there has been a lot of things going on, a lot of teams who have different coaches, have an entirely new roster, are rebuilding. Connor Bedard is about to make his NHL debut. Give us two or three storylines from this offseason that have been your favorite so far, or you find the most intriguing to watch this new season.
As far as storylines, the Bruins offseason is maybe the single most interesting one we've had in the NHL in a long time, because they lost one of the six best centers in the entire league, and they lost one of the five or six best second line centers in the entire league, and they had no ready-made replacement to any comparable degree. They are really going to try and piece it together through defense and goaltending this year and wholly reconstruct how they play hockey to make up for the roster deficiencies they have. The weird trades and contracts that went out this past offseason, the Lightning giving Janot that long-term deal, the Avalanche giving Miles Wood and Ross Colton those long-term deals. I find it really interesting to see what we consider historically good teams like Minnesota, like Tampa Bay, like Toronto, who the players are they are willing to take chances on. Because I always like to think, what do they see that we're not thinking about? And you pour through everything. You look at zone tracking stuff. You look at puck recoveries. And you don't see it on a surface level idea. And unless you're going to fundamentally change how you play, I don't see where the extra value is going to come from. And I give these teams the benefit of the doubt. Tampa traded those picks for Brandon Hagel, and they got 60 points out of him last year, which was double his career high previous to that. And then number three, it feels a little more wide open this year than it has in years past, because Colorado and Tampa aren't as good as they've been the last couple of years. The Bruins took a step back. Nobody believes in the Leafs. Vegas won already, which kind of dings you a little bit because
they weren't able to do anything to replace because of salary cap.
Yeah. Edmonton, the goaltending is just such a question mark. You don't feel good about that team, even though the rest of the team is the best version of Edmonton we've seen since McDavid's gotten there. The Devils and Hurricanes and Stars have not won anything, and I would say those are probably the three best teams in the entire league on paper. Dallas has gone the furthest out of all of them, but that was a five-game cup final loss to a significantly better Tampa team. I think those are my three biggest stories. The Bruins not being able to replace a lot of losses and having to change their entire team. The weird contracts to bottom six guys from historically good teams. And then the fact that nobody seems like they're clear-cut the best team in the league the way we would have said Tampa or Vegas or Boston or Colorado were the last couple of years.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Just from listening to your podcast, and you talked about how teams have to fundamentally change what they do and how they see players. That's something that the Rangers, when they were looking for a coach, and you covered it for 4 weeks trying to figure out what to talk about. It was a matter of, do you hire Peter Laviolette? Do you hire, I can't even remember the jerk off from Nashville, John Hines? Is that who it was?
John Hines, Jay Leach,
yeah.
Babcock, Quinville.
And it was like, how do these guys actually fundamentally change what your players do on the ice, and how does your style vary so much from Gerard Gallant's that it's going to make a difference, as opposed to trying to make wholesale changes to the roster, which you can't do. And that's the issue with the whole flat cap, and you can't make changes to your roster because you locked yourself into so many long-term deals. And I think that's an issue that more teams than just the Rangers are having. Like you said, Edmonton has that. Toronto more or less has that. I mean, they leverage long-term injury reserve. Tampa has that. I mean, they lost a bunch of key guys. I mean, they've lost in the last 4 years, they got rid of Palat. They had to get rid of Yanni Gourde, Barclay Goodrow, Ross Colton, like you name it. And And now Vasilevsky goes on the shelf and you can't even bring in a backup because you don't have the cap space without leveraging long-term injury reserve.
It's fascinating. Addendum I will make to what you just said is, a lot of these teams are very risk averse. they could make cap space if they wanted to. The Rangers very easily could have made cap space this offseason if they wanted to. But these teams do not think in a fundamentally creative way. We see this all the time, especially in the NBA, where contracts are just more or less made up, where a guy can sign a five-year extension and 6 months into it, he can demand a trade. There'll be 10 teams lining up to trade for them, and they make the money work very easily. The Rangers very easily could have made cap space. Tampa Bay could have made cap space. But a lot of these teams don't like to admit they've made mistakes, and they would rather ride with what they know in the guys they have. And I'm sure this conversation will shift Ranger-centric, and we'll talk about it. But if you really wanted cap space to change the roster, you would have given a 2 or 3 with Gaudreau. That's $4 million right there.
Yeah,
you could have bought out Trouba, and you would have had $6 or $7 million right there. And you could have gotten 3 impact players just on those 2 moves. But you liked the guys you had. You didn't want to tinker too much because you felt like it's not the players. We just need a better coach. And we'll see. That's why they're going to play the 82 games this year.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, anyone who's saying they're not going to buy out their captain, well, they bought out their legendary goalie who they retired his number the second he retired. They can buy out anybody. If Wayne Gretzky can get traded, anybody can get moved at any point.
Wayne Gretzky got traded 3 times. Yes. There is no sanctity in any sport.
No.
It's not worth that point. It's moot. It is not a constructive point. It's fortune cookie wisdom. Anybody can get traded at any time, especially now in the way sports are now. Even in hockey, we are slowly but surely seeing players leverage their way to better situations. Matthew Tkachuk, Jack Eichel, watershed moments.
Yes. So my 3 stories to watch for this season are going to be some of the rookie centers in the league. You got Bedard, you've got Adam Fantilli, and you've got Logan Cooley. Those are the 3 guys that I'm really looking forward to watching this season. I mean, I know it was it was one play in one game that was broadcast everywhere because of it being in Australia, but the Logan Cooley move he had in that first game versus LA was unbelievable for a guy playing his first professional game, even if it was a preseason game. It was an awesome move. And the fact that he almost didn't come to the Coyotes is insane. And the Coyotes in general, I think, are going to be one of my teams to watch. They added a lot. And I know, again, that could end up being just trade deadline pieces where they move them for a 3rd round pick, or they trade one Nick Ritchie for Brett Ritchie at the deadline. But I think the Coyotes did a lot to maybe prove that they are worth it to stay in Arizona. So that's definitely a team to watch. So those would be 2, the rookie centers, the Coyotes. And the 3rd would probably be Florida. I want to see if that team was a fluke, if they actually can run it back. I mean, you shedded some of your dead weight. I mean, Mark Stahl and Eric Stahl played a lot of minutes in those playoffs, and they were dead weight. Granted, I also don't love them, but we're not going to get into that. But yeah, I mean, they added a decent amount of pieces. You have Ekblad and you have Montour on the shelf at least till December, if not later in the season. And I want to see if Bob can get it back together like he had in the first 3 rounds of the playoffs. And if Matthew Tkachuk could will this team, maybe not even have to will this team. Maybe the rest of the team plays like they played in the playoffs and they could actually do something.
Florida's fascinating because they were – we always try and project these things in terms of likelihood and range of outcomes. That was the best possible range of outcomes imaginable for Florida last year, where Bob went from being 900, about league average, to a 930 goalie for 3 rounds. Matthew Tkachuk scored 4 overtime game-winning goals on the way to the Stanley Cup final. Carter Verhaeghe was over a point per game. Ekblad and Montour both actually stayed healthy for an extended period of time, which they've struggled to do in their entire careers. Barkov was what he always is, and they found ways. You could say they got a little lucky in some of the matchups, that they were better situated to play Toronto and to play Carolina than some of the other teams that might have been able to advance. But Florida threw a lot of money at stopgaps on their defense. And Florida's defense has always been the issue the last couple of years. The year they won the President's Trophy, it wasn't that they played good defense. It was just they won every game 5-4, and they were content with doing that because the forward talent was so good. I think Florida more than likely steps back because I just don't think Bob can do that for an extended period of time. We don't know if Spencer Knight, what kind of situation he's going to be in. He stepped away from hockey last year for an extended period of time to get himself right. But Florida is interesting. I think the East in general is going to be a little more interesting than the West, frankly, because you have teams like Florida, Ottawa, Detroit, even the Islanders, who are all along that cut line where you could see them sneaking in. And if they get in, they have one or two really, really good high-end players that they'd be able to go on a Florida-like run. But Florida itself, I think last year was their best case. I think the comp for Florida is what Dallas was the year they went to the cup final in the bubble, where they got a little further than they expected to. Everything kind of went their way. And then they had to take a step back for a year or two before they got back to being a bona fide contender. I think Florida has to do a little more work in their roster construction before they can be a real cup contender again.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think that, you know, they kind of had a similar offseason, and again, it was much more extensive for Florida because I think they had a little bit more cap space and they had the promise of a cup run to what the Rangers did. They went out and they found guys who were either bought out or they made too much money last year, so they were able to get them on cheaper deals. And they're going to see how that works out for them. That guys that, you know, like an Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who was the captain of the Coyotes and was a 60-point player at points when he was with the Coyotes. And then the issue was the underlying stats were very bad for him in Vancouver, but like he wasn't, you know, who's the guy the Rangers got from Boston in the Nick Holden trade? God, I can't remember.
Rob O'Gara.
He was not Rob O'Gara, but he was not great. And they're hoping that he can play in a third line sheltered role and get some points for them on the back end. I mean, they have when Ekblad and Montour are healthy, they have a really good back end. I mean, the two of them, Josh Maher and Gustav Forsling, and then Ekman-Larsson, and then take your pick of any of the other guys who potentially could make this team, Matt Kjerstad, Dmitry Kulikov, Mikula. So I think they have a really good defense. If Bob plays up to even a three quarters of his salary, they could be a decent team. But I agree, they definitely need to work some things out, especially, you know, with their goaltending, because you don't know what Bob's going to be and you need a real insurance. And Anthony Stolarz is not the insurance market you think he is. So we'll see. But let's get into kind of ranking our team, seeing where the chips will fall for this season. Let's go in alphabetical order by conference. We'll start in the East and we will start with the Atlantic Division. Bruins, we kind of talked about a little bit. Buffalo Sabres. You've got the three Canadian teams, Montreal, Ottawa, Toronto, Detroit, and the two Florida teams, Florida and Tampa. If you had to pick three teams, we'll go to wild cards after we do the Metropolitan. Three teams that are for sure making it out of this division. Where are you going?
I don't even feel great about this, especially now that Tampa's not going to have Vasilevsky till December, but I think Toronto definitely is the best team in that division. I think they win pretty easily. I think there's a good chance Buffalo is either that third team or a wild card, but I think if I had to pick, I would probably say Toronto, Boston, Tampa, and then Buffalo is that fourth team.
Okay, so you don't even, unless Florida makes it as the fifth wild card.
I think the defense being as dinged up as it is for as long as it might be, and it's going to take, you know, Ekblad and Montour a couple weeks to get back up to playing for him after being out that long. I think the math works against them in that respect. And Bob is good every other year. He was good last year. He's not going to be good this year. He's generally been an every other year kind of goalie. There's a couple of them around the league where every other year they oscillate between being good and being unplayable. He was really good down the stretch and in the postseason last year. There's a world where they make the playoffs and Boston doesn't, but I think Boston's defense and the goaltending being as good as it is, I trust that more than Florida. I think they have a better chance of piecemealing together an offense because they still have Pasta and Marchand than Florida being able to piecemeal together a defense and goaltending.
Okay, that's interesting. My issue with Boston is I think that, and again, they were a great team last year. Don't get me wrong. Ullmark and Swayman were one of, if not the best goaltending duo in hockey. The defense is unbelievable, and they added Hampus Lindholm for a full season. But they, for since Bergeron pretty much has been a sophomore in the league, they relied on him and Krejci to be their like shelter, their leaning post to play defense for them when their defense falters. And they were the, you know, they did both. They were two-way centers. They were defensive savvy and were really good offensively. And I think without that, I mean, Charlie Coyle is potentially your first line center, or Pavel Zacha, both who have never really been first line centers that have proved they could do anything. That makes me really nervous. And I think Zacha could figure it out with Marchand and Pasta, but I don't think Coyle with DeBrusque and whoever's going to be on the right wing of that line, JVR, call me a hater, but I don't think that's going to work out. I think they'll make the playoffs. I just don't think that they're going to be that high. And again, it's my opinion. You know, I could be totally wrong. I've been wrong plenty of times before on this podcast, cue literally every episode we've ever done. But for me, it's probably Toronto number one easily. I'm going to put Florida at number two. I really like Florida. They could prove me wrong and the defense could shit the bed. But three, I think Buffalo goes to number three. I really like what Buffalo's building there. I mean, Dahlin and Owen Power are unbelievable defensemen together. Tage Thompson just came off an incredible year. They've only got more young guys to come in there. And then Boston probably is the wild card team from there.
Yeah, Buffalo, I think my only reservation with saying they're definitely a playoff team is I want to see how their goaltending timeshare shakes out, because Devin Levy's been in college where you only play like 30 games in a season, and Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen was okay last year. But if Levy's going to start 40, 50 games, I want to see what he looks like. I think there's a good chance Buffalo's a playoff team this year. And if Devin Levy is good, then I think Buffalo's got a real shot to be second in that division.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, if they could, again, another team that if they could work out clearing some of those cap space cap hits that they have, like Eric Comrie, he's going to be your third goalie and he's making $1.8 million this year.
They're doing that to get to the floor, though. They've got a decent amount of cap space as like a team. Like if Buffalo really wanted to be aggressive, they could have gone out and added a lot of stuff this summer, but they still feel like they're in the building stages of their ascent to being a good team. So, yeah, they have some bad contracts. Jeff Skinner is a good player. He's not worth $9 million a year. Opozo, what he's getting paid, he's not worth that. You mentioned Eric Comrie, but they're biding their time. Buffalo is still probably a year away from being a real contender. But you talk about Tage, Dylan Cousins was a 30-goal guy last year. Jack Quinn has been really solid through 2 years in the NHL. Casey Mittelstad is finally kind of putting it together as that third-line center. That's a pretty good forward group. Like, in that division, there's a real argument that's the second, maybe third best forward group behind, I'd say third, probably behind Tampa and Toronto.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair. I mean, even I would say might possibly even top six, definitely not better than Tampa's, but overall with bottom six, I think that Buffalo probably has it, because Tampa's going to be rolling out who? Like unknown guys like Gabe Fortier and Alex Barry Ballou. Like, yep. What are we doing here? So I think, yeah, Buffalo has as good a shot of anyone in that division to be a playoff team. Maybe not Montreal or Ottawa, but let's go over to the Metro. This is the division with the Carolina Hurricanes, the New Jersey Devils, New York Islanders, New York Rangers, Philadelphia Flyers, Pittsburgh Penguins, Columbus Blue Jackets, and Washington Capitals. This is our division. We may talk about this one for a while. The Devils and the Hurricanes are the two best teams in this division. Rangers are probably comfortably at number three. And then the rest, who knows? Let's talk about it.
Carolina and the Devils. Carolina's a better regular season team. I think Carolina probably wins the division because they're better constructed for the regular season. I think the Devils have the highest ceiling of any team in this division. I agree with you that the Rangers are definitely third. Pittsburgh probably by just simple luck is the fourth best team. I don't think Pittsburgh was horrendous last year, but they just couldn't get any bounces to go their way. Their general manager didn't have a single clue what he was doing. They added guys who didn't make them better at the deadline. If the Penguins had even competent, not even good goaltending, they make the playoffs over the Islanders last year. And it took a superhuman effort from Ilya Sorokin for the Islanders to be a playoff team. The Islanders can make the playoffs, but only as a wild card, and that would require teams in the Atlantic not being as good. I don't see that, frankly. I think the way the Islanders are constructed, their margin for error is so small that you miss one of those high-end guys in your top six for an extended period of time, or Sorokin or Pelech. You miss any of your key guys for an extended period of time, you're screwed. The Islanders only got in last year because everybody else around them was awful. Pittsburgh did them so many favors. Ottawa, Detroit, those teams all did them favors. I mean, the Panthers got into a playoff spot, I want to say, with 2 weeks left in the regular season, and Pittsburgh was dead at that point. They were entirely out of gas, and the Islanders were just better than Florida. That was really the bar last year. I think there's a good chance the East bounces back and is a little bit better than it was last year. So I think the Islanders are comfortably fifth. Washington, they don't care. They just want to get Ovi the record. And then Columbus and Philly, they have the same over-under total, 73.5. I think Columbus has some talent. I think they'll be better than they were last year, but they're still not a good team.
No, I think that there's a lot of interesting storylines to watch here. I mean, first of all, with Pittsburgh, Kyle Dubas coming in and immediately being able to get rid of all the bad contracts Ron Hextall, that's who it was there for, right? He either signed or traded for is incredible. I mean, shipping out Granlund and Jan Ruda in one deal, and Casey DeSmith for that matter. I mean, he was an okay goalie, and it wasn't a lot of money, and being able to bring in the reigning Norris Trophy winner is incredible, and it only costs you a first round pick to get rid of all those contracts and add the player. Okay. I appreciate you, Kyle Dubas. Not really, because you brought a really good player to my division, but that's going to be an interesting storyline. Honorable mention on storylines, though, is Pittsburgh being eliminated from playoff contention last year by Chicago, which gave Chicago the points they needed to win the lottery, get Bedard, first game of the season, Chicago at Pittsburgh.
The scriptwriters were lazy.
Yes, very lazy, but it's still hilarious that's how it worked out. And then you mentioned Columbus, that whole situation with Mike Babcock, what an absolute train wreck. You thought that, you know, this season you were going to potentially have high hopes, and I didn't, because I think many people know that Mike Babcock is no longer a good coach and no longer able to relate to young guys, which is exactly what Columbus has. And then you get rid of him, which may help the young guys, but any guys who were vets who were preparing for Mike Babcock's style or may have reached out to other people in the community to know what to expect from Mike Babcock now have a first-time rookie head coach a week before training camp starts.
You bring home a lion, you're going to get bit in the face. This is not rocket science. When people have repeatedly shown who they are, believe them. More guys in their 50s and 60s do not change who they are as people. The Blue Jackets were so desperate to feel legitimized. Their general manager was so desperate to make the playoffs. He took the lowest common denominator. I'm sure they would have went after Quinville if the NHL would have let them do that. They wanted to be legitimate and get legitimacy from other places because they know they couldn't do the work themselves. And that's the recurring theme. Whenever you see guys like Babcock get second and third choices, Bill Peters getting another chance in the WHL, these are teams that are desperate to be perceived as legitimate by the people around them. And they don't care about the outside perception. It's only the opinion of the people they care about that influences their decisions. Columbus got what they deserved. And it's a shame because that team is – the forward group is decent, and that team should be fun. They won't be good, but the Blue Jackets should at least be fun this year, and instead we're talking about a coach.
I would have loved to have seen, and again, I don't want Mike Babcock in the league, don't get me wrong, just until the first time they played Philly, and I wanted Adam Fantilli to go with a Michigan and see the look on both Tortorella and Babcock's face when that happened. Oh my God, that would have been incredible. But hopefully we can still see the look on Tortorella's face when he does it to him. I really like that team, that a lot of the forwards and some of the young defensemen they have. I like more of their pipeline more than I actually like what's on their team. But I mean, Cole Sillinger, although, you know, he might have a bad season after his public life has been exposed, but Cole Sillinger, Kent Johnson, Johnny Gaudreau, Adam Fantilli, Patrick Laine, and then on the back end, Werenski, Boqvist. Their goaltending is what bothers me. I saw a report today from Aaron Portsline, who's the Columbus beat writer, that their best goaltender in camp has been Jet Greaves, who has been a career ECHLer. That's not great.
No,
not great
at all. No, they're in a brutal spot in that they tried to raise the floor of their defense, like adding why can't I think of Buddy's name from the Devils and Provorov. Yeah, adding Severson and Provorov raises the floor of their defense, where it won't be an atrocity like it was last year, but it won't be actively good. Werenski is good. He's just overpaid, but they had to overpay him to keep him. They'll be better than they were last year. The Flyers are, they finally started their rebuild 6 years too late, but at least they realized they needed to start rebuilding.
Yeah, no, exactly. And do I think they have the right coach in place for that? Probably not.
He's not there for that. He's there to make sure it doesn't become a laughing stock, a joke, and to he's there to be, I don't want to say like a field trip chaperone, but he's just there to make sure nobody gets arrested or anything over the next 2 or 3 years until they get the coach, they get the players they actually want, and the coach to coach them. That team is 3 years away from being where Columbus is right now.
Yeah, too bad Danny Briere couldn't do that for his own son, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah, so I think it's the three playoff teams are the Hurricanes, the Devils, and the Rangers, and then maybe Pittsburgh. I think if they, if Carlson can repeat what he did, they may get in solely based on because they could score more goals. Who knows if Jari could be good, if Nedeljkovic could have a good year as a backup if Jari inevitably gets hurt again. But I would say comfortably the Devils, Hurricanes, Rangers. And while we ponder on our wild card teams there, we will go over to the West and the Central Division. This is the Coyotes, the Avalanche, the Blackhawks, the Stars, the Blues, the Predators, the Jets, and I'm missing one team. And did I say the Avalanche?
Yeah, she definitely said the Avalanche.
Okay. Well, this is the Central Division, and I don't know who I'm missing because I went out of order, and we'll figure it out when we're going along. So was it the Wild, maybe?
There you go.
The Minnesota Wild. So Blackhawks add Connor Bedard. That is not going to be enough to drag that dumpster fire of a team into the playoffs. I mean, the only two players on that team that are worth anything, three players, are Connor Bedard, Seth Jones, and Taylor Hall.
That's it.
That's legitimately it. Tyler Johnson is not getting you anything of note. Andreas Athanasiou is your like fourth highest paid player. Not doing anything. Actually, probably not fourth anymore because you paid Nick Foligno and Corey Perry $4 million each. So Bedard's going to be unbelievable. I think he's going to have a lot of highlight reel goals, but it's not going to be enough to get Chicago out of the basement. They will have another top five pick next year, easily.
100%. They will definitely be in the lottery again. The Blues, Jets, and Predators are all in the same tier where they might stumble ass backwards into one of the wild cards, but they don't have a particularly high ceiling. I couldn't see them winning a playoff round. I think Minnesota is kind of finally bearing the brunt of the dead cap of Parise and Suter, where they're a good team, but they haven't been able to improve on what they've been the last 2 years. Colorado, probably taking a step back. I think Dallas is one of the five best teams in the entire league. And Arizona should be feisty this year. I don't think Arizona is a playoff team, but they'll give teams good games. They are slowly but surely getting a decent team together.
Yeah, I think they'll probably miss the playoffs by two spots. I think they'll probably finish at like 11 or 10 in the conference. But I think they'll be way more competitive than they have. I mean, even last season, they were more competitive than they were the season before. And they were playing in a 5,000-seat arena and literally were trading anything they possibly could at the deadline. If it wasn't hunkered down, it was gone. So I think, yeah, it's Dallas. It's probably Colorado as the two or the three. And then I guess Minnesota by default. But I think when you, I know they just signed Zuccarello and Foligno to big extensions. Those don't kick until next year. But when you have to have Tampa Bay retaining 20% of Pat Maroon, who's already making $900,000, that's not always great for what you're going to be able to do to add if you are good during the regular season.
No, and Minnesota's, this is why the salary cap exists, to punish teams so they can't hoard talent. It's unfortunate because I would have liked to have seen what the Wild could have been if they could have kept adding the last two seasons, but instead they're kind of boxed in. They stumbled into a goalie last year, which worked out well for them when they swapped Talbot for Gustafson, who was really good for them last year. Marc-Andre Fleury is a solid backup at this stage of his career. Ryan Hartman went back to being what he'd been in his career, a 30-point guy as opposed to a 60-point guy. If Kaprizov plays, he'll be a 100-point guy, but he missed a good 3 weeks last year. That was the difference between the team the year before and last year. Joel Eriksson Ek, pretty solid two-way guy. Zouk is aging pretty well playing with Kaprizov, but their ceiling is pretty capped out because they haven't been able to add to that group.
Right, exactly. And I think that the defense should get a little bit of a nice jolt by adding, you know, Brock Faber. We saw what he added towards the end of last season, but is a rookie defenseman who is more or less, you know what he is. There's not really much more of a ceiling, I don't think. I mean, he played 4 years of college and seems to be exactly what he is. Is that really going to be able to inject that much into your lineup? Is adding, you know, is Matt Boldy now taking up a lot of your salary cap really going to change? Is he going to be score another 25 points this season? Maybe, but maybe not. Maybe he regresses.
He was really good for them last year. I'll be fair to Matt Boldy. I want to say he had 30 tucks last year. You're adding him to that group. You're, in theory, finally adding Marco Rossi, who a lot of people forget about because he's missed a lot of hockey the last 2-3 years because long COVID really jacked him up back in 2020, and he's still kind of recovering from that. But he's somebody they're adding to that mix. Brock Faber, you mentioned. Matt Boldy was 30 goals last year. They have the potential, if some of their young guys can kind of be a little more than they were last year, or in the case of a Marco Rossi, just entirely addition to what they had last year, the Wild could probably win a round if they get a good playoff matchup, but I don't think they're in the same tier as Dallas or even Colorado. And Colorado, they've lost a lot of guys from the team that won the Cup 2 years ago. You hope Bowen Byram can stay healthy. Makar is the best defenseman in the entire league. You don't know if Georgiev is actually good or if he's a product of his environment, because he was pretty good for them last year. You don't – his underlying stuff, his goal saved above expected, that all showed pretty solid goaltending. But their forward group just isn't as good as it was 2 years ago, and they're putting a lot on McKinnon, Rantanen, Makar to carry the load of that group. And you just don't know how sustainable that is. And that's really difficult to do over the course of an entire season. Tampa and Colorado were kind of in the same boat where they lost a lot of the guys from their teams that won the Stanley Cup. And they're going to ask the guys who are still there to pick up a lot more weight.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And it's a matter of then, yes, you have to look at, is Georgiev a top 10 goaltender in the league? Can Bowen Byram step up, like you said? But then what did you add this offseason? You added Ryan Johansson, who has struggled. Granted, you have him at half his salary cap. You added Jonathan Drouin, who's a bit of a player who's perpetually struggled. You added Miles Wood, who you paid way too much money to be on your fourth line. Ross Colton, who you paid way too much money to be on your fourth line. You brought back Jack Johnson. Like, is Jack Johnson really going to be able to fill in for Eric Johnson? I think Eric Johnson at 5 years older is way better on your defense than Jack Johnson will be. So I think you're right. It's going to be, they're definitely going to take a step back. And then this whole Nichushkin situation, who knows what's actually going to happen if he gets pulled from the lineup halfway through the year.
The NHL said there's no investigation and he's been in training camp. So I think everybody's just going to pretend nothing happens from what I'm gathering.
Yeah, that seems to happen a lot in hockey, doesn't it, huh?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, so... But yeah, I think this is probably the division that has three teams again, like, unless, like you said, the Pacific sucks and one of those other teams, the Blues, the Jets, or the Predators are just stumble backwards into it. The Jets, I would say, probably have the best chance, followed by the Blues. The Predators have the least, but maybe UC Saros can drag them there. So let's go over to the Pacific. Anaheim Ducks, Calgary Flames, Edmonton Oilers, Vancouver Canucks, LA Kings, San Jose Sharks, Seattle Kraken, Vegas Golden Knights. I think Edmonton again should in theory win this division if their goaltending can stay healthy and consistent. Stuart Skinner has a chance to prove that he's the real deal. Jack Campbell has a chance to bounce back. And you know what you're getting in McDavid and Dreisaitl and Nugent Hopkins. I would say Evander Kane, but you don't necessarily know because he's injury prone and he's been inconsistent in his career. Like, other than being in Edmonton, he's been inconsistent. But I assume you agree Edmonton's the number one team in this division.
Absolutely. I don't think it's really close, in all honesty. I think Vegas winning their cup, they're human. They have gotten that sense of satisfaction, and it is really hard to repeat. I know it's happened relatively frequently in the NHL, actually the most of any of these sports over the last 10, 15 years, but it's really hard to repeat. No idea what Vegas's goaltending situation is going to shake out like. I think Edmonton by default is the best team. I think Vegas will get in as a playoff team. And then Seattle and Calgary, I could both see as that third team or a wild card team. Low ceilings. The Kings are interesting. I think the Kings overplayed their hand in a lot of the moves they've made over the last year or two. They're building this team like they're a lot closer than they actually are. Like, don't get me wrong, Dubois is a good player, and he makes them better. But they're not a team that should be making a move like that. That's a move for a team that this is the guy who's going to put us over the top. That puts them into, you know, okay, maybe we can win a playoff round and give a good team a good series in the second round. That's kind of where I see LA. It's where I see Calgary. I don't think Calgary could win a round. Seattle is interesting, but their goaltending has just been so bad through the 2 years of that team's existence that I can't see them going anywhere in the playoffs until they address that.
Yeah, I think they're just, again, they're buckled by the Philip Grubauer deal, and you could trade that if you really wanted to. Like, you could probably trade any contract shy of, I don't know, is there really anything that you can't trade? Maybe Jeff Skinner, just because he's almost at 10 million. Maybe that's the only one, but I like their team a lot. I think, you know, Matty Beniers on his second year would be hopefully a really good player for them. You know, having Burakovsky back and healthy, adding Yamamoto, I think could be a really nice third or fourth line piece there. But again, they it's 1 year that they've showed me something, and I'm not convinced that Dave Hakstol is a good enough coach to really address what this team needs. And with LA, this is my bold prediction for the episode, is that Eric Portillo will be the starting goalie by the end of the season. I don't think that Phoenix Copley or Cam Talbot or David Riddick will actually be consistently playing number one. And Portillo is going to be the Devon Levi of this season, where he'll come in halfway through the season or a third of the way or two thirds of the way through the season and be the number one guy.
I can definitely see that being the case for them. They've been really trying to figure that position out. The West in general, there's like three good goalies in the whole West, and one of them is on Nashville, one of them is on Winnipeg, and one of them is on Dallas, and everybody else is praying effectively. Calgary has no idea what Markstrom is going to be after what he was last year. John Gibson kind of seems like he's done being an effective goalie. The three LA guys you just mentioned, none of those guys inspire confidence. San Jose is actively tanking by playing Mackenzie Blackwood. The Kraken have two goalies who are both like 880 save percentage guys. The Canucks, Demko was good 2 years ago. He was really bad last year on a really bad team. And Aiden Hill has never played more than 35 games in a season in the Pacific Division at the NHL level. He hasn't played that many games, I want to say, since 2016 or 2017. The Avalanche, is Georgiev actually good? And then everybody else in that division, sans Dallas, but Binnington, come on now. That there just aren't a lot of good goalies to begin with, and they're really concentrated in the Eastern Conference.
You're telling me you don't have faith in Peter Mrazek backstopping the Blackhawks to the playoffs? Come on.
I can't say I do. They stumbled ass backwards into good goaltending a couple years ago in the 56-game season, and then they traded the guy because they were trying to lose.
Yeah, sounds about right. So I on this division, I'm probably it's Edmonton. Vegas will probably end up in the 2 or 3, and then it's a coin flip, Seattle or Calgary. I think Calgary will be better than they were last year. And they made a run at the end of the season. I mean, adding Coronado, they really didn't do anything to the lineup. They just brought back what they had. They're going to have a full season of Matthew Coronado, and they added Jordan Osterley to replace Michael Stone on defense. That's literally all they did.
So, yeah, they didn't have any cap space because all the extensions kicked in, because the Huberto extension and the Mackenzie Weegar extension, that's all their cap flexibility. They had a ton last summer where they did do something really dramatic to remodel their team. Calgary, in theory, they had one of the least lucky seasons in the history of the NHL. This is a team that lost 36 one-goal games, lost in overtime 17 times. We're talking about they were 4 points out of the last playoff spot last year. They win three of those overtime games. They're a playoff team last year. They won't possibly be that unlucky again.
No. And it's funny that, you know, the three guys, right, who were on that Tampa, those two Tampa teams that won the cup, the third line, Gord, Coleman, and Gaudreau. They all left. Gord was under contract, but he goes to Seattle in the expansion draft. The two guys that were free agents that gets big deals, Coleman and Gaudreau, are debilitating their teams cap-wise and on the
Blake Coleman's fine. Blake Coleman's fine. They have bad contracts, but Blake Coleman's fine. He'll give you 15 goals. He'll be responsible two-way. They've effectively, interestingly enough, Calgary's effectively made their own version of that line, with Mikhail Backlund being Yanni Gord and Andrew Mangiapane being Blake Coleman. Like, in all honesty, Blake Coleman is the Barkley Gaudreau of that line in Calgary. It's just they don't have enough high-end guys. Kadri ran out of gas for them last year. He came out of the gate really hot, but I want to say he had 9 points over the last 30 games in the regular season, something to that effect. Huberto, half as many points as the year before. They can't possibly be as unlucky, just purely on the vibes being better, that they don't have Daryl Sutter anymore as the coach.
That's absolutely fair. And I think, you know, Brad Treboli was a great GM for them in the beginning, and then he kind of just lost all steam. He's now going to see what he could do with the Leafs. But I think Craig Conroy, you know, fresh blood as a GM in the league, is really going to hopefully be able to do things for them. And who is it? Ryan Huska is their new head coach, right? That's who they ended up hiring. He was with their AHL affiliate. Again, two brand new faces that's not, I mean, granted, they've been around hockey, but they're not part of the old boys club. See what you could do with this this team. Like, you can't get, I mean, I guess you could get worse. You could be a lottery team, but who knows? So let's give our way too early conference final predictions based on what we just discussed, starting in the East. Who you got?
The Devils, and I don't know. I can't say Toronto with a serious facial expression, because it should be Toronto, but they're not going to be. The Devils and Tampa Bay, I will say. I think Tampa gets in, and I think Tampa Bay has the favorable matchup in the first round. I think they squeak by, because the way this is set up now, the two best teams usually play each other in the second round. So either the Devils are going to play the Rangers or the Hurricanes in the second round, and that'll be the real conference final.
Yes, that's exactly right. And, I had a reaction to that at first, but Tampa having Vasilevsky potentially – getting a rest for the first 3 months of the season and then coming in and being able to be relatively healthy for the playoffs could be a benefit. I mean, if they could stay afloat with whoever they end up bringing in, because you know it's not going to be Jonas Johansson backstopping that team through December. I mean, it's going to be somebody. It's going to be a journeyman. I mean, I think their best bet would to get Craig Anderson out of retirement. That's honestly the best free agent available, because
there's goalies out there. Halak is out there. They could give up like a four, and they could probably get Daniel Vladar from the Flames. There's a few goalies out there they could go and get if they wanted to. It's just a matter of how much risk they're willing to tolerate.
Yeah, no, that's fair. All right, that's interesting that you have Tampa there. Again, it's not the craziest thing I've ever heard.
I can't see Toronto getting there. That's the biggest reason. And
exactly.
And like we said, the Devils and the Hurricanes are going to play each other in the second. The Devils are going to play either the Rangers or the Hurricanes in the second round. So we can't say one of those two teams, unless they're a wild card, which unless the Rangers are a wild card, then maybe you could see Rangers Devils conference final. But I don't think I could see that, or I would like to see that, frankly.
Yeah, because that'll just be devastating if our side loses and the Devils go to the cup finals on our loss. Yeah, you know,
Florida, Buffalo.
I like those... Florida would be the option. It's Florida or the Rangers for me. I could see the Rangers being a decent enough team and then adding something at the deadline, but it doesn't necessarily work out immediately. They fall to a wild card spot, end up in the Atlantic, which I think is more favorable for them no matter who they play, except maybe if they have to play Boston and Boston ends up being good, because we always struggle against Boston. So Rangers or Florida for me, and it's going to be the Devils on the other side, because I think my issue is the Hurricanes goaltending. They can never stay healthy, either of them. And even if Kochetkov comes up, he's got, what, 30 games of NHL experience? That's basically like riding on Devon Levi in Buffalo.
We've seen Carolina go on these playoff runs, and the same thing happens every single time. Either the goaltending fails them, or the other team's best players are better than their best players. That's not a knock on Aho. That's not a knock on Svechnikov. Against the Rangers, Zibanejad and Panarin, they're just better. Against Florida, Barkov and Tkachuk, they're just better. Until the Hurricanes get a guy of that caliber to make plays against other teams' best players, you are always going to struggle doing the 12-forward approach versus the top nine and fourth line approach that we've seen work pretty consistently for the last decade.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think that Carolina added to the wrong positions this offseason. Yeah.
Orlov was weird.
They added Caleb Jones. Then they brought in Nathan Beaulieu for a PTO. Like, you needed to be adding
Coney D.
Yeah.
Lemieux.
You needed to be adding a third or even a fourth insurance goalie, because you know neither of those guys are staying healthy for 82 games. And you needed to bring in more depth scoring, or somebody who could potentially replace Jordan Staal, because he's getting older and he's probably on his last contract. He's not going to be there forever. He's playing fourth line minutes now. The Kotkaniemi, he's been decent, but that contract is brutal. 8 years.
They thought he was going to be the Jordan Staal replacement. That was the plan when they signed him, and he can do that. But for what you're paying him, you need offense too. That's the issue there with that contract. Is he's a solid NHL player, but he doesn't give you enough offensively. And it's interesting because Carolina has shown good judgment in the contracts they've given out for the most part. The only one I can really complain about that they should have done that they didn't was Dougie Hamilton. Other than that, they've known when to walk away from guys because they weren't going to be worth what they were going to ask for.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And they took draft picks away from the Flyers because of it. They didn't want to pay Tony D, and they got a second, a third, and a fourth. The Flyers signed him for 1 year, bought him out. They bring him back at like $2 million, which is what they thought he was worth in the first place. And all they had to give up was Massimizzo, or whatever the hell the guy's name is, Rizzo, and a fifth round pick to get them to buy out Tony D'Angelo and get him at $2 million. Do I like the guy? And do I think that he is what they needed? Absolutely not. But they know how to, like you said, work with contracts. So
it's been their real advantage, is they run their team like a hedge fund. They cut costs anywhere they can. It's been an issue. I mean, I'm pretty sure they're playing without an AHL team this year because they couldn't agree to figure out a situation with that where they were going to share one of the affiliates with someone else. But they've run their team weird, but they'll be fine. They're better in the regular season than in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. Yeah, Chicago Wolves are going to be the first team in a very long time, if ever, to be an independent AHL team and see if that can work out. They've already had a bunch of guys leave for PTOs, and they may end up getting contracts, or guys that signed contracts like Keith Kincaid. Whatever, that's neither here nor there. That's a way too nerdy hockey discussion. But Western Conference Final, what do you got?
Dallas and I'll say Dallas and Edmonton. Okay. I think Dallas is the best team in the West, and I think Edmonton is the best team in the Pacific. As long as Dallas gets there, I think Edmonton definitely gets there, because Edmonton will have the advantage of playing either the second team in the Pacific, which will either be LA, Calgary, or Vegas. They're better than all three of those teams. Mm-hmm. Or playing one of the Central Division teams with one of the good goalies. And they can beat a team that is just Hellebuck or just UC Saros.
Yes. No, they absolutely can. I 100% agree with you here. Dallas and Edmonton. But I tend to think that this could be the year Dallas figures it out and goes back to the Cup final. I know they are only, what, four years removed at this point from a Cup final, but that was the bubble and everything. Not to put an asterisk on it because, you know, it was a pain in the ass to have to do that. Like, it was hard work being in the bubble. But, yeah, I think that they have a really good team, and if Duchesne can do, like, three quarters of what he did last year on a bad Nashville team, then, you know, and Jason Robinson takes another step. Sagan and Ben can play up to 50% of their contracts because they haven't been previously. They'll be fine. They'll probably go to the Cup final.
Dallas, I think, has the best forward group in the entire NHL, 1 through 12. They're going to play Duchesne on the third line. Joe Pavelski is ageless. He was outstanding last year playing with Rupe Hintz and Jason Robertson. They got a really good year out of Jamie Benn last year playing with Wyatt Johnston, who got some Calder buzz late in the season last year. He was really good. Tyler Seguin, 3 years removed from hip surgery, finally looked like the player he was before the injury. And that injury happened in the bubble, and he played with a bad hip through the entire playoffs, and it took him 2.5 years to get back. The only question I have with Dallas is, are they going to still stubbornly play Ryan Suter 20 minutes a game, even though he stinks at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you traded away Colin Miller, who played that same, because he, Suter's a lefty, never mind.
Yeah. No, but they played him on his offside last year because they were playing him with Heiskanen last year.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, when you trade away Colin Miller and now you're relying heavily on two guys who don't have a ton of experience, I mean, Harley and Nils Lundqvist split the season pretty much last year, like, playing. I think they're going to have to at least just start until they either add somebody or where they can accrue the cap space to do so, or they're just going to have to, I think, based on what they have down there. I mean, unless you're going to tell me that Leon Bichelle is going to make an immaculate step up and be able to make the team this year, which I doubt. But I like Wedgwood. I think Wedgwood is probably one of the top 5 to 10 backups in the league when he's actually healthy and not getting concussed. He also has some of the sickest masks, big Marvel fan, so love his masks.
Oh yeah, I agree with you on Wedgwood 100%. One of the better ones. Of the guys who aren't really starters that are backups, like we talk about some of the other guys around the league, like Varlamov could start on another team, Swayman yeah. could start on another. Of the guys who aren't that, Wedgwood is definitely one of the five best.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so Edmonton, Dallas, and the Devils, and insert team here, the Lightning, Panthers, Rangers, let's say. What's your Cup final? And then who's winning? And the Conn Smythe. I was going to call it the Calder. Go. Jesus Christ.
The Calder is the AHL one. Yeah, yeah. I make that mistake too. I think it's chalk. These are the two best teams, betting-wise, Dallas, New Jersey. I think the Devils win the Cup. I think the Devils have the best combination of depth and high-end talent. I think there's a world where Jack Hughes finishes second in the Hart in the regular season, and they really kind of supernova this year, and they have like 115-point regular season. The only real question mark is the goaltending, and the goaltending only has to be good. It doesn't have to be great because of how good the rest of the team is.
Yeah, I mean, look at the teams that have won the last couple of years. I mean, you're looking at Aiden Hill. You're looking at, I mean, Vasilevsky's an outlier because he's one of the
Darcy Kemper,
Bennington. Matt Murray, Bennington.
Yeah. You don't need an elite goalie. You just need a good goalie.
Braden Holtby.
Holtby flirted with elite there for a little while.
For a little bit. But it just, I mean, after the Cup, he was literally out of the league in 2.5 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it pains me, you know, as a Rangers fan. I know I just got to be, you know, impartial here. The Devils are probably the best team in the East, and it sucks because when you have one of the best goaltenders, best defensemen, best forwards in the league, but then the Devils just have so many guys who are in that second tier that the Rangers don't have. Like, it's hard to bet against them. They showed so much. And could they take a step back this year? Again, we both are not absolutely saying that the Devils, they should be, but there's no guarantee here. So if we lose money, it's not on us. But like, they should be the best team in the East. I want to see how much it takes for Connor McDavid to finally want to leave Edmonton. So I want them to not be able to make another cup final. And I think ultimately they won't, because I think that those teams are very well matched in terms of top six, and Dallas has the edge in goaltending. So I all that to just say, I agree with you. Devils, Dallas. I don't know who's going to win that, but if it's Dallas, Ottinger, Jason Robertson, and if it's the Devils, it'll be Dougie Hamilton or Jack Hughes.
Yeah, Jack Hughes or Dougie Hamilton. Those are safe bets.
So your way too early predictions, Dallas, New Jersey, Stanley Cup final. And there you have it. That is our NHL season preview. One more actually thing before we Calder and your what was the other thing I was looking for? Calder and Vezina for this year.
Vezina, Sorokin, he should have won it last year, frankly. Ullmark winning it, the team won it, not him. He wasn't the best goalie in the league last year. And Calder, it's Fantilli or Bedard. Whichever one has more counting stats is going to win it. They're both going to have really good counting stat seasons. They're probably going to have pretty bad underlying numbers just because they're going to get caved in a lot because they're on bad teams. But both of those guys are freaks. They're both going to be really good hockey players. Yes. And Logan Cooley will get some down ballot love too. There's a world where I could see Devin Levy, if Buffalo is good, inserting himself into that conversation as well.
Yep. No, I'm on board. It's going to be Bedard or Fantilli. So if Vasilevsky won't get the love this year because he'll be hurt for most of the season, the other guy who I could see potentially being probably not winning the Vezina this year, but getting into the finals would be Ottinger, because if Dallas does have, you know, a crazy good regular season. So Ottinger, Sorokin, and probably either Shesterkin or Hellebuck if Winnipeg falls into the playoffs.
Saros too. Honorable mention. He's always there. He's been great on really bad teams.
Yeah. Okay. You saying Saros made me think of something. You know, at the draft, we saw Tom Fitzgerald make the last trade of David Poile's career, the 7 for 7. Does Barry Trotz go back to that well with his first captain and trade him Saros at some point during the season if the Devils goaltending does not hold up?
I think the Devils should do it anyway. Even if Schmidt is playing well, go get Hellebuck, go get Saros, or what we've heard, which is kind of weird, Nashville's more inclined to trade Askarov than to trade Saros right now. Go get that. Go get the goalie, pair them with Schmidt instead of worrying about Vanecek, or do them with Vanecek and go for it, man. We've seen too many teams wait for the window to come, and they're good year after year. But this might be the best iteration of the Devils you get right now. Don't wait when you can. It's always better to add to what you have, knowing what you are. You can say, well, we're going to be good again next year. Next year might not come. It is always better to be aggressive and go for it and say, hey, we did everything we could, as opposed to waiting to see if Schmidt pans out or if Vanecek can be 9-10, 9-15 goalie again. I think if they don't trade for one of the established goalies, that means one of their goalies worked out.
That's fair. I think they should do it earlier than later, just
100%.
We'll see. All right, so that has been our NHL season preview. We are going to jump into our Bruce Banner's bandwagon. Again, sorry, no soundboard, no clip today. But Nick, give us your bandwagons for this coming week, or that happened in this past week that you were jumping on and one you were jumping off.
Okay, so jumping on, the Phillies are rolling right now, and they kind of look like they're going to handle business against the Marlins. I can see a world where they get hot, they close the series out quick, and they go into that series against Atlanta, and they give Atlanta a really good series. I could see a world where that happens. And bandwagon, I am off. The Atlanta Falcons. I thought the Falcons were going to be good this year. I really bought into the Arthur Smith hype. I thought Bijan, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, how could this offense not work? And they've been very aggressively mediocre through 4 weeks of the season so far.
It's the not playing Cordarrelle Patterson effect. That offense was only good but their defense was never good when Cordarrelle Patterson was in. So that's, I'm just bitter about it because that was a number one running back I had, and now he's no longer there on my dynasty team. But if I was relying on him, my team couldn't have been that good anyway. So my bandwagon, I'm jumping on, and I think you will like this one, Nick, is Adam Copeland, formerly Edge, in case you haven't heard, is now a member of the AEW family. What an incredible, like, for just aside from just the Adam Copeland stuff, that pay-per-view was probably my favorite one of the year so far. Like, I think that top to bottom, there wasn't a miss of a match. I think every other pay-per-view that's been has had one or two matches that were like, eh, whatever. Wrestle Dream was genuinely a really good pay-per-view. Adam Copeland coming to the company to, you know, have a potential feud with Christian is unbelievable. And that's my bandwagon I'm jumping on. Bandwagon I am jumping off is, this might be, it's not going to be a hot take. I think that if the Rangers, it's a potential bandwagon I'm jumping off. If the Rangers end up keeping Johnny Brzezinski and Tyler Pitlick on this roster over Brennan Othman and Will Cooley, it will be an absolute disservice because both of those guys have played well enough through four preseason games to earn a spot on this team.
Completely agree with you. The Rangers have for so long obsessed with, well, we need third liners that play like third liners. We need fourth liners that play like fourth liners. Dress your 12 best forwards and figure it out.
Exactly. You know, Will Cooley was so serviceable in the four games he played last year, and he didn't play particularly well, but he was serviceable. He was more serviceable than Ben Harper, I think, honestly. Like, Ben Harper was decent, but, you know, I know it's apples to oranges, it's his offense, defense, but put Will Cooley on the fourth line if you have to. Throw Othman on the third line. Let, I don't even care who, Nick Bonino, Barkley Goodrow be a healthy scratch. Just let the two of those guys stay up and at least get 15 games. So if they don't do that, which I don't think they will, that's why I'm jumping off it.
I agree with you. I don't think they will because they gave those veterans those contracts. Like, if it forces Pitlick out, I don't think they mind, but they're not going to do that to Bonino and they're not going to do that to Gaudreau. I think you have a better chance of Othman making the team because you can do Gaudreau on the fourth line as opposed to the third line where he's been most of training camp. I don't see Cooley because they have Pitlick, Bonino, Gaudreau, and Vizi, who are all fourth line guys, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, they kept Brodzinski up too, which was interesting. I know he played well. Like, he's been playing well, but I think he's just there kind of as a warm body while Heedle's hurt and some of these other guys. But I don't know. Also, if Ben Harper makes this team over Zach Jones, I don't know what to do.
I think they're going to trade Jones for whatever they can get because they don't have a path for him to the NHL, and he's wasting time here. These are the most important points of development is your draft 2, draft 3, draft 4 years, and he's got 20 NHL games to his name. He needs to play, and he's not going to play here. Get a third-round pick for him. Send him somewhere where he's going to get to play. I agree with you. Harper's not good enough to be on a team that's trying to make the playoffs, which has also been an issue for the Rangers the last 2 years, is they have got guys who just have pulses, like Ben Harper, like Libor Hayek, like Ryan Carpenter, like Dryden Hunt, just guys who have no business being on good teams.
No, absolutely not. And it just, it's making me lose faith in Pizza Boy, as he's been mentioned many times on the Liberty Blue podcast. I don't know if he's the guy like to run this team, but we'll be here forever if we're going to start talking about the Rangers. So we could just hope and dream that they don't break our hearts again this season. This was a lot of fun. Nick, I want to give you a chance to plug anything you want to plug. Let our listeners know where they could find you and your other work.
My Twitter handle is Nick Zararis. My name, Nick, Zararis. That's where you can find everything. I do Liberty Blue Pod. I do Locked On Flames a couple times a week. We're in football season, so I'm doing NYG Weekly. I edit the Jet Stream, which is also a football podcast about the New York Jets. What am I missing? I do some content on my own. I'm planning more stuff on YouTube on my own on Nick Zararis content. But yeah, you'll find me on Twitter the most. That's where you can find all my other work.
Yes, you definitely will find him on Twitter. I interact with a lot of his tweets just because they are relevant into Rangers and other sports culture. So yeah, it's good follow. Definitely follow, listen to their podcasts, follow everything he's doing. It's a good time.
We have Sam Rosen tomorrow on Liberty Blue.
Hell yeah. That's going to be exciting. I can't wait to listen to that one. How many mistakes are we getting?
Sam was good when we had him last year. We told him it was live, so like he was taking his time, but Sam was great last year.
Yeah,
but,
no. I like to bust on him, but he really is. He's great. And I think I've met him a couple times, variety of events, and he's a good guy. So it's all love. For us, follow us on Instagram at Agents of Field Podcast, on TikTok at Agents of Field Pod. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on your platform of choice if you are enjoying. And until next time, we will see you at Center Ice.